Morning.
Looks like everybody, go ahead, Michael.
All right. Good morning. Please come to order. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judges Flory, Riley, Smith, the Honorable James B. Flory presiding.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Court of Appeals. First of all, give me an indication if you can hear me. Mr. Greffin or Geffen, can you hear me? All right. And is it Ms. Zuri? Can you hear me? All right, I see your nods. This technology has worked pretty good for us so far, although this morning you will not see Judge Riley or Judge Smith on the screen. They're having some video issues, although they are with us and can hear. Judge Riley, are you hearing what we're talking about?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. How about you, Judge Smith?
Yes, thank you.
All right. So if during the course of the proceedings here, you lose our audio feed, make sure you signal to me by waving your hands or something so we can try to correct that. But for the most part, this technology has worked just fine. Our marshal will have a timer on the screen. If you can see that, keep an eye on that so that you know what your time is. If you can't see it, you can ask me and I'll be keeping separate time here and can let you know where you're at in your argument. So the first case that we have here today is State of Minnesota versus GRK. It's court file A19-2037. It would be helpful if during your, when you're not talking or arguing, that you keep your microphone on mute, because then we don't hear the shuffling of paper and things like that. But otherwise, we're ready to proceed. Each side will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if they wish. So please begin your arguments by identifying yourselves for our record. And with that, we will proceed. Counsel for appellant, you may proceed. You're still muted, Mr. Geffen. Should be,
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Geffen, and I represent the appellant in this matter, GRK. This is a matter involves an appeal from a determination from district court denying GRK an expungement of DHS and MDH, or Minnesota Department of Health records, relating to two matters that were resolved in her favor, two cases from 2018 continued for dismissal. The matter under appeal is whether the district court abused its discretion when it excluded MDH and DHS from the expungement. I plan on talking about two things today, and focusing on that the lower court's decision is clearly erroneous because it's based on erroneous interpretations of law and is manifestly contrary to the weight of the evidence and the record as a whole, and even to the judge's own findings. I'm going to start discussing first the weight of the evidence. In a case such as this, where the proceeding was originally resolved in the petitioner's favor, at the district court level, any objecting agency must show by clear and convincing evidence that the interest in public and public safety outweigh the disadvantages to the petitioner not suing the record. Of course, clear and convincing evidence is to prove something or to the truth of the facts asserted are highly probable and without frailties. And the most important part of this, though, is that in the judge's order, in the memorandum side, in paragraph 2, the judge cites, it has not been established that the petitioner poses a risk to any individual or to society. Now, just using that language, the district court, again, didn't qualify this and didn't identify that, well, she doesn't pose a risk to anybody except for vulnerable individuals or except to children. This is a blanket statement. It says any individual or to society.
Mr. Geffen, this is Judge Riley. I just have a question, if you can help me with how this process works. And so the records that are held by the BCA and any law enforcement, Washington County, those records have been expunged and sealed.
That's right? Correct, Judge.
And so what I don't understand then is if DHS, say your client, I know she's disabled now, but say she were to be able to work again and she wanted to work with these vulnerable adults, When records are expunged, it doesn't mean they're destroyed. How does DHS get those records? It's just a point of interest of mine.
Certainly, Judge. There's a provision in the expungement statute that says, that states explicitly, if you don't include DH or MDH in your original expungement order, then even if the records are expunged, DHS can have access to the expunged record when conducting a background study. So
I see that. Isn't that 609-7A4? Is that what you're talking about?
I believe that's true, Judge. I don't have the statute in front of me.
But this is a question for you. It says an expunged record of a conviction may be opened. And in this case, we don't have a conviction.
Well, that Judge, is a fantastic point that I didn't even contemplate. And I think, I don't know if DHS did either, because of course they're fighting this expungement because they want to look at the records in case they want to do some other assessment of it. And DHS has identified, and why they're fighting is they're saying they need to be able to look at these records. I mean, if the decision from the court were that they don't have an ability to look at those records under that statutory provision, we would be fine with that, of course, but they've identified that these records might lead to a permanent disqualification for GRK to never work in any kind of licensed facility again. And that has been our concern from the beginning. And the judge didn't notice that either, but it's a very, very important.
Counsel, this is Judge Smith. So the records right now, and maybe in also the agencies can respond to this, are not in the hands of the agencies, but they are only in law enforcement's hands?
Technically, everyone still has them because the order isn't final, because it's under appeal. But the only records that would really exist right now, or that would exist after the order was put in place, would only be allowing DHS to have access to them. DHS has never conducted a background study on GRK, but they have identified they want to have that ability because they think she might be permanently disqualified.
And so as to then the order as it currently exists, what does that mean with respect to other persons' access or obligations on, how does it affect, I guess, your client? Is it only that the agencies would have access later should your client seek licensure, or does it affect housing, what any other element of life for your client?
Judge, the order as it's written resolves all public records. It leaves open only the possibility that MDH and DHS could later obtain those records, and as they identified in their brief, maybe permanently disqualify her. But you're correct, the public records, if the order is implemented, is gone. Are gone. Well, not gone, they're sealed.
Okay, and then if I might ask, and I'm sure you'll get into this, but in terms of the case law on this topic, is there any case that you can point to, and especially specifically to agency records with respect to possible licensure? Because RHB didn't deal, as I think I noted in a footnote, it didn't deal with agency access to records. Is there any case involving expungement, even with or without agency records, where an appellate court has reversed the district court's decision as an abuse of discretion?
The one case that affirms the lower courts is the state cited in our brief. It's an unpublished decision, State versus LKG, a 2013 case from the Court of Appeals, where an individual obtained an expungement, including DHS records. DHS appealed, and the court, referring back to RHB, identified that the agency had not provided any unique or particularized harm, and the case was affirmed. There is another case, it's State versus WGM, a 2019 case. I don't think it's cited in any brief, but it's Westlaw number 388-6848. It's another unpublished case, but it is a reversal. It's a reversal of an agency, though, of the city. I believe it's the city of Minneapolis. They're the only cases that sort of are close to the fact pattern you've identified, Judge. But in State versus WGM, the Court of Appeals reversed the district court's denial of sealing city attorney records based, referring back to RHB again, citing that there was no unique or particularized harm identified by the objecting agency, and the Court of Appeals reversed.
So in terms of the substance of the law, you were focusing on getting you back to where you were on whether that the district court's conclusion, I don't have a right, the words right in front of me, but basically that there was not at present a risk to any individual. But the statutory standard, and I have this question for both of you, is that whether there's been proved that by clear and convincing evidence that the interests of the public and public safety outweigh the disadvantages. I guess the question for me is, for both of you, is what does the interests of the public and public safety mean? Does it mean that there has to be a present risk, or can the interests of public safety include the interest in being able to conduct a background study on someone who's going to serve vulnerable adults or children in a licensed capacity?
And Judge, So I think that in terms of the interests of public and public safety, it must require more than just that general interest of the Department of Human Services and MDH having that right to do background studies under the Background Study Act. And we have a series of cases where DHS records have been at issue, and the Court of Appeals has affirmed cases where DHS records were there and cited, like in RHB, that there has to be something more particularized. If the legislature wanted to remove DHS and allow it to sort of perform its function as conducting background checks, it could have simply excluded DHS and MDH and said, this doesn't apply, and they get to do their background study. But they didn't. And they have done it before, specifically for crimes that require registration. You can't expunge crimes that require registration in no situation. But instead of doing that, what the legislature did just said is you have to notify DHS, and you have to notify them of what you're doing. And if that is then expunged, it includes DHS. That was the regulatory scheme that they put in place. And I think what has happened, and it was argued in district court by DHS, that we're trying to circumvent a legislative process. And that's not true. This is a way for individuals to have DHS records sealed. It's the only way to have them sealed. And we have that right to try to do it. DHS has the right to appeal it or a right to contest it. But this is where they get the proverbial bite at the apple. And if they have that strong public and public safety and can prove it, they most likely can win. But they still have to bring particularized and unique proof of harm. And specifically in this case, they don't. All they bring, Judge, is the fact that there are some bad police reports. And I would say that for any case that was continued for dismissal, any case that's charged, there are some bad police reports. They're oftentimes one-sided. They're oftentimes inaccurate to one side. But there are going to be, in almost every single case that I can think of that's continued for dismissal, something bad. And that's not enough. DHS could have done so much more. They could have spoken to people. They could have talked to the alleged victim. They could have talked to the prosecutor. They could have spoken with the Board of Nursing. And when we talk about regulatory, this individual is still regulated by the Board of Nursing. DHS and MDH are not her regulator. They just approve background studies. And this person still has to abide by all the terms of the Board of Nursing. They have to prove that they're just like attorneys, that they're of moral character, and if they have issues with the law, they're brought in and deal with it. But DHS is just conducting a background study. I think that's different. But they don't bring anything. When I bring an expungement case, Your Honors, I have to bring affidavits. These are on conviction cases mostly. We bring affidavits. We bring statements of loss of income through jobs that are denied. We bring in statements of support from people that know the individual. We have to bring a lot to meet our burden, which is clear and convincing. But DHS doesn't do that. DHS brings nothing. They only do a paper review, and they assume everything in those police records was true. I mean, they even call the allegations in this case, crimes in their brief. They refer to them as the crimes or the criminal offenses. They are not crimes. They're not criminal offenses. She still has the presumption of innocence. She continued and followed through on her continuance for dismissal, and they were dismissed. This was a plea agreement that was agreed to by the state. If the state thought there was such a threat, they would have had the obligation to continue to prosecute the case. Now,
Mr. Geffen, this is Judge Florian. We've been asking you a lot of questions, so you haven't gotten through a lot of your argument, and I understand that. But I do have a question that really isn't addressed in the briefing, and it has to do with remedy. Here in factor number two, the court says she's no risk, but then later it says the agencies have a compelling interest and they've met their burden. There's really not much discussion about how those two findings are weighed. If we were to be concerned about the order and whether it really complied with the statute in conducting any meaningful weighing, what would the remedy be from your perspective? Would it be an outright reversal? Would it call for a remand for further findings? What's your thoughts on that?
Judge, we would request the reversal. I mean, I think
I figured you would, but what's your thoughts is remand something that the court could or should consider under those circumstances?
Yeah, the record as it reads, Judge, I agree. I've read in the memorandum number two about 500 times, and I don't understand how things were weighed. And truthfully, I don't understand some of the sentences. But the record is still the record, and there's no scenario where the department met its high burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence based on nothing unique, nothing particularized, nothing. It's only the records or the police records. There's not even an argument that there's anything outside that. The judge never made a finding that the police records were true or accurate. He never made a finding on that. There's nothing. And he also, in number two, never makes a finding that she poses a risk of harm to anyone. There's enough here, although I would say it is at times confusing, to identify that there's no reason to remand and only reverse. I see that my time is up, Judge.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Geffen, if you wish. We'll move on to counsel for respondent. You may proceed when you're ready. We're not hearing you, counsel.
Can you hear me now, Your Honor?
Yeah, we hear you just fine. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Zuri Balmakoon, and I represent respondents in this matter on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The Department of Human Services and the Minnesota Department of Health have been entrusted with protecting vulnerable adults and children by conducting thorough background studies. With this goal in mind, DHS and MDH have a compelling interest in reviewing appellant's criminal record pursuant to a background study.
So counsel, this is Judge Flory, counsel. Wouldn't that be true in every case that the departments have a compelling interest? So what makes this case different than any other case that was either resulted in an acquittal or a dismissal without a finding by the state?
Yes, Your Honor, it is correct that the Department of Human Services and MDH would have an interest in reviewing any applicant's criminal history record, whether they were applying for employment or a position under DHS and MDH. The difference here, and the difference that was found by the district court, is that appellant in this case has a status as a licensed nurse. Additionally, the record also indicates that appellant is working with children as a volunteer for a church, and child care facilities are also required to conduct background studies of employees and volunteers. So there are many instances where appellant's record would be information that is relevant to a background study conducted by DHS or MDH. But the issue is not necessarily whether DHS and MDH can complete a background study. It's instead whether the district court abused its discretion in finding that appellant, or rather respondent, should be excluded from the expungement order. And in this case, the district court did not for two reasons. First, appellant's alleged offenses coupled with her status as a nurse create a heightened risk to the population that DHS and MDH protect. Second, there's no evidence within the record supporting
that. The district court found she was not a risk at all to individuals or society. And then later in that same paragraph says that your clients have a compelling interest and that they've met their burden. But there's no discussion of weighing those varying interests. And quite frankly, those seem to be kind of contradictory statements on that issue. How are we to conduct effective appellate review when there's no discussion in the order of the weighing of the interests?
Thank you, for Your Honor. Frankly, I think that sentence from the district court's order that appellant does not pose a risk to any individuals or society is argued by appellant in isolation. Because if we continue reading the district court's order, the district court goes on to say, but appellant does have a status as a nurse. This licensure would allow her to apply for employment or a position with DHS and MDH. And because of that status as a nurse, she could present a heightened risk to a vulnerable population, such as vulnerable adults or children. And I think this relates to Judge Smith's question of whether the public safety risk needs to exist currently or whether there is a potential for the public safety risk to exist. And here, the court stated, well, generally, we are not concerned about appellant going out and committing crimes against her community. But because she is licensed as a nurse, she could present a public safety risk to this population, the population being vulnerable adults and children. And because that possibility exists of her applying and presenting this risk, then DHS has presented clear and convincing evidence that the heightened risk or particularized risk exists in this case.
Is that implied in the order, counsel, or can you point to me in the court, in the order, where the court actually made those findings?
Your Honor, in reviewing the district court's order, it doesn't make those findings explicitly, but it does make those findings within its analysis. And I am not disagreeing with you, Judge Flory, when you say that the court stated that appellant does not pose a risk to individuals or society. But the analysis that follows that sentence seems to, it indicates that the district court had gone further than simply examining whether she presents a public safety risk now and determined that she could present a public safety risk because of these alleged offenses and in conjunction with her licensure as a nurse. Though it is not stated explicitly, Your Honor, the analysis leads to the conclusion and the court's ultimate finding supports the analysis. Again, Your Honors, we're not here to decide whether the district court, or rather DHS and MDH, can conduct background checks. We're here to decide instead whether the district court abused its discretion. And here, the district court did not. The second factor that I'd like to argue is that the district court did not rely on any facts that were clearly erroneous or manifestly contrary to the record, and nor did it apply the law improperly. First, Your Honor, the district court applied a very thorough analysis of 609A.03 subdivision 5. It took the information within the record and applied it to each of the 12 factors. And those factors, particularly 2, 3, 5, and 10, for example, the district court found weighed in favor of excluding the Department of Human Services and MDH from its expungement record. As I had already discussed, Your Honors, the risk of harm that is posed by appellant is related to her licensure as a nurse. Again, the district court went on to review other factors, such as the length of time since the crime was committed and the time that appellant requested expungement. Here, appellant committed two offenses in 2018, January and June, and then requested expungement in April of 2019. Case law indicates that a year between the alleged offense and the request for expungement is not necessarily enough time for the district court to use that as a reason to grant expungement on petitioner's to petitioner's benefit. The fifth factor was the aggravating factor, and the district court considered, for example, that a 7-year-old child was allegedly involved in the felony terroristic threat incident, and that the child was so agitated and frightened by the incident that when law enforcement arrived on scene, she ran to law enforcement requesting some comfort and relief. There is nothing within the case law or the statute that prevents a district court from reviewing the records within its possession, such as the complaints, in reaching its decision. In fact, the case law indicates that—
Does the court actually conduct any weighing of those factors? I mean, it seems to me your argument is asking the appellate court to weigh those factors based on the record. The district court on those factors makes statements from the record that no one disputes, but it doesn't say what the significance of those factors are in its analysis. How are we to glean the significance that the district court attached to those factors when it hasn't done any weighing of them?
Your Honor, the fact that the district court had provided an analysis under each factor is indicative of the district court's ultimate thought process in finding that the expungement order should be denied. Now, the district court may not have explicitly said for every factor, this weighs in favor of appellant and this weighs in favor of respondent. It did so in some factors. And I think that the analysis under each element should be reviewed under a totality of the circumstances in supporting the district court's finding. I mean, when courts have determined that a district court has failed or abused its discretion, that holding existed because the district court did not issue any analysis and simply, for example, filled out a template order. But here, the district court is thorough in providing an analysis and review of the evidence under each element of the statute.
Counsel, I wanted to, this is Judge Smith. I wanted to ask about when we get to the crime, and I know opposing counsel is talking about, well, there wasn't a crime because there was, well, there wasn't a crime proved here because it was dismissed. Of course, in all of these cases under the statute that deal with subdivision one, which is cases resolved in favor of the petitioner, you're supposed to apply the factors that include the term crime and consideration of the crime. So that tension seems to me built into the statute right now because these cases are all resolved in favor that we're talking about under sub one, and yet you have to consider the crime. My question for you is, counsel was saying you need more, your opposing counsel, than just the complaint or the police reports, et cetera, that the agencies didn't provide any information to actually prove the truth of what was alleged. What's your response in terms of the agency's obligation to do so, referencing hopefully case law, if there is any, or what we should be considering?
Judge, there isn't any case law or the statute for that matter, doesn't require either party to provide an affidavit or testimony to support its position. There's nothing prohibiting the court from making its decision based on the records that exist publicly through the criminal complaints. And so requiring this heightened level of proof does not necessarily comport with the requirements of the statute. That may be what counsel does in his cases, but it is not a requirement through case law or the statute. And here, the district court had enough information based on the publicly available record of the alleged crimes that appellant had committed in, or allegedly committed in this case, to make a decision. And frankly, the statute only provides 60 days for entities to respond to these requests. If the legislature were to require more of parties, then the legislature should require more time and explicitly state that we expect all parties to provide testimony and that the rules of evidence will apply to these types of cases, which they do not.
So, but what does it mean that it has to be established by clear and convincing evidence?
Sure, Your Honor. The clear and convincing evidence simply states that, or standard is simply expecting parties to show that it is more likely than not, based on the evidence before the court.
No, that's probable cause. More likely than not is probable cause. Clear and convincing is a higher standard.
Pardon me, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, clear and convincing is a higher standard, but it is not as high as proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And here, a clear and convincing evidence standard has been shown to be proven by records that exist publicly to the court. And that is shown by cases that were referenced in respondents' brief, such as State v. AKN or State v. Mbaye. Your Honors, the evidence that the district court reviewed established by clear and convincing evidence that appellant should be excluded from the expungement order. And for the reasons that I've argued, request that the court affirm the district court's ruling. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Geffen, you'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Opposing counsel discussed this time limit or waiting period. I'd like to identify to the court that almost every type of case within the expungement statute has a waiting period, except for proceedings resolved in your favor. The statute explicitly does not require an individual to wait any amount of time before they pursue an expungement under proceeding resolved in favor. And in fact, they even waive the filing fee in those cases. So, you know, and I would also identify that in the court's order, which opposing counsel identified as supportive of the court's decision regarding meeting the lofty burden of clear and convincing evidence with Section 3 of the Miranda, all it says is that the dates of the incidents. It doesn't say that weighs in favor of anybody. It just specifically lists uncontroverted dates of the incidents. There's never been a waiting period, and I think there's important reasons why. Opposing counsel identified that it was stated in the court's order that GRK poses a heightened risk. That's not in the court's order. The judge never states that. And in terms of what requirements the department needs to meet when trying to meet clear and convincing is the statutory requirement And we have cases that say, if you're going to meet that statutory requirement as an objecting agency, you need to bring unique or particularized harm. And that was not done here.
Counsel, is it, you haven't said this, but I just want to be clear on it, because you, I asked about your argument that there wasn't a crime proved. Is it your position that an objecting agency needs to actually prove up the crime by clear and convincing evidence? In other words, prove by that heightened standard, heightened beyond preponderance, obviously, that the crime actually occurred? Is this a little, a mini trial on the crime itself?
I don't think they have to do that. They may try to do that. I mean, I think you have the, regardless of where the case starts, you're at a position where the state has to prove by clear and convincing evidence. They've got to prove something, and they've got to do it with unique and particularized information. I don't think every case would be the same. Maybe there is a case that they need to show that there is a clear and convincing chance that this occurred, but something more than just regurgitating the comments from police that are hearsay and at times double hearsay.
Is it disputed here or otherwise supported in the record that the reason the case was dismissed was because the alleged victim did not cooperate, refused not, or, you know, avoided service?
I think that's true.
Okay.
But I think...
Is that a particularized fact that suggests that, well, that was what happened in this case, that that's a specific fact to this case that's relevant, that the victim actually just declined to participate as opposed to exoneration?
Well, I think it could be...
Dismissal because they decided that they had the wrong person or something like that.
Well, I think it could go both ways. I mean, I think it adds a question mark, but just as easily as someone who's just sort of avoiding it could not want, might choose not to lie under oath and commit perjury. They may not want to continue to spread lies about, and that's our client's position the whole time. This is not accurate.
And by so not it seems to me that, I mean, what you're talking about, and we could go through every factor like this, that there are multiple factors that are case specific that all need to be balanced by a district court. We had a district court that identified what the appropriate standard was and the court's obligation to weigh the factors. And then as I went through the factors, I could put a plus and minus mark, you know, or neutral, just through either through what the court expressly said in its analysis or through just sort of common sense. At the end, I agree. I don't think there's an explicit weighing these three outweigh these four or et cetera, but couldn't an appellate court infer from an order that identifies the correct standard, that goes through each of the factors and that rules a certain way, that the court actually, in order to rule that way, must have found one set of factors to outweigh another?
Judge, not in this case. In this particular case, I mean, the judge doesn't even address unique or particularized.
It addresses what happened, what the allegations were, why the case was dismissed, the person's nursing degree, how long it happened, what rehabilitation a person has made, who was involved in the incident, the lack of a criminal history. I mean, that looks pretty specific to this individual, doesn't it?
I see that my time's up, Judge. Can I answer the question?
You may.
I mean, some of it's specific, but I mean, if you look at RHB, they were very clear that you just can't throw a bunch of the facts of the case out there in that situation. That isn't showing, those are unique facts, but that's not the standard. The standard is unique and particularized harm, which is a different thing. It's not just facts. And RHB went through great detail to say you can't just rely on facts. I see that my time's up, and thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Geffen. And thanks to both counsel for your briefing and arguments here today. We will take the matter under advisement at this time, and we'll have a decision on the case within 90 days. We stand adjourned on this matter at this time.